"This is really intolerable," he cried, glaring across the platform. "I must ask you, Professor Challenger, to cease these ignorant and unmannerly interruptions."
There was a hush over the hall, the students rigid with delight at seeing the high gods on Olympus quarreling among themselves. Challenger levered his bulky figure slowly out of his chair.
"I must in turn ask you, Mr. Waldron," he said, "to cease to make assertions which are not in strict accordance with scientific fact."
The words unloosed a tempest.
"Shame, shame! Give him a hearing! Put him out! Shove him off the platform! Fair play!" emerged from a general roar of amusement or execration.
The chairman was on his feet, flapping both his hands and bleating excitedly.
"Professor Challenger, personal views later,"
were the solid peaks above his clouds of inaudible mutter. The interrupter bowed, smiled, stroked his beard, and relapsed into his chair. Waldron, very flushed and warlike, continued his observations. Now and then, as he made an assertion, he shot a venomous glance at his opponent, who seemed to be slumbering deeply with the same broad, happy smile upon his face. At last the lecture came to an end. I am inclined to think that it was a premature one, as the peroration was hurried and disconnected. The thread of the argument had been rudely broken, and the audience was restless and expectant. Waldron sat down, and after a chirrup from the chairman, Professor Challenger rose and advanced to the edge of the platform. In the interests of my paper, I took down his speech verbatim.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he began, amid a sustained interruption from the back. "I beg pardon, ladies, gentlemen, and children. I must apologize. I had inadvertently omitted a considerable section of this audience."
Tumult, during which the professor stood with one hand raised and his enormous head nodding sympathetically, as if he were bestowing a pontifical blessing upon the crowd.
"I have been selected to move a vote of thanks to Mr. Waldron for the very picturesque and imaginative address to which we have just listened. There are points in it with which I disagree, and it has been my duty to indicate them as they arose. But nonetheless, Mr. Waldron has accomplished his object well, that object being to give a simple and interesting account of what he conceives to have been the history of our planet. Popular lectures are the easiest to listen to, but Mr. Waldron," here he beamed and blinked at the lecturer, "will excuse me when I say that they are necessarily both superficial and misleading, since they have to be graded to the comprehension of an ignorant audience."
Ironical cheering.
"Popular lecturers are in their nature parasitic."
Angry gesture of protest from Mr. Waldron.
"They exploit, for fame or cash, the work which has been done by their indigent and unknown brethren. One smallest new fact obtained in the laboratory, one brick built into the temple of science, far outweighs any second-hand exposition which passes an idle hour, but can leave no useful result behind it. I put forward this obvious reflection, not out of any desire to disparage Mr. Waldron in particular, but that you may not lose your sense of proportion and mistake the acolyte for the high priest."
At this point, Mr. Waldron whispered to the chairman, who half rose and said something severely to his water carafe.
"But enough of this."
Loud and prolonged cheers.
"Let me pass to some subject of wider interest. What is the particular point upon which I, as an original investigator, have challenged our lecturer's accuracy? It is upon the permanence of certain types of animal life upon the earth. I do not speak upon this subject as an amateur, nor, I may add, as a popular lecturer, but I speak as one whose scientific conscience compels him to adhere closely to facts, when I say that Mr. Waldron is very wrong in supposing that because he has never himself seen a so-called prehistoric animal, therefore these creatures no longer exist. They are indeed, as he has said, our ancestors, but they are, if I may use the expression, our contemporary ancestors. who can still be found with all their hideous and formidable characteristics, if one has but the energy and hardihood to seek their haunts. Creatures which were supposed to be Jurassic, monsters who would hunt down and devour our largest and fiercest mammals, still exist.
Cries of Bosch. Prove it. How do you know?
Question. How do I know, you ask me? I know because I have visited their secret haunts. I know because I have seen some of them.
Applause, uproar, and a voice.
Liar. Am I a liar?
General hearty and noisy assent.
Did I hear someone say that I was a liar? Will the person who called me a liar kindly stand up that I may know him?
A voice.
Here he is, sir.
And an inoffensive little person in spectacles, struggling violently, was held up among a group of students.
Did you venture to call me a liar?
No, sir, no,
shouted the accused, and disappeared like a jack-in-the-box.
If any person in this hall dares to doubt my veracity, I shall be glad to have a few words with him after the lecture. Liar! Who said that?
Again the inoffensive one, plunging desperately, was elevated high into the air.
If I come down among you!
General chorus of, Come, love, come! Which interrupted the proceedings for some moments, while the chairman, standing up and waving both his arms, seemed to be conducting the music. The professor, with his face flushed, his nostrils dilated, and his beard bristling, was now in a proper berserk mood.
Every great discoverer has been met with the same incredulity, the sure brand of a generation of fools. When great facts are laid before you, you have not the intuition, the imagination, which would help you to understand them. You can only throw mud at the men who have risked their lives to open new fields to science. You persecute the prophets, Galileo, Darwin, and I.
Prolonged cheering and complete interruption.